are you with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome to another show. My name's Hereward Fenton, and Truth News Radio is beaming out around the planet and into the ether in search of intelligent life, wherever we may find it, and with the aim of providing a little bit of intelligence of our own to stimulate your mind and produce perhaps some new perspectives on what's going on in the world. Now, the big breaking news for Australian listeners is, of course, the change of leadership here in Australia. We have a new Prime Minister, and we haven't even had an election, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, this is the second time it has happened in the past 3 years that we've actually had a change of Prime Minister without an election. And in fact, we've changed from one to another and then back to the original one again. The originally elected Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, was ousted in a leadership spill back in 2010. And he's now back at the helm after an absolutely appalling 3 years, close to 3 years, of having Julia Gillard as our Prime Minister, with Labor's support plummeting in the polls. And no matter which way you cut it, no matter what happens, including this leadership change, it's guaranteed that Labor will lose the election. It is quite an incredible development, though, to see this, to see the former leader come back. It kind of highlights, really, the absurdity of politics in this country. And I think it's mirrored in many other countries around the world, where the democracies have just simply become a bit of a pale sort of shadow, a bit of a joke, really. I mean, they don't the elected leaders, the representatives in parliament, don't really govern the country. I mean, that's the point. It's kind of a masquerade, and the decisions are made in other places. For example, you know, the Bilderberg Group that we've seen in the news a bit lately, organisations of global reach that are run by extremely wealthy and powerful people make the decisions, and all of these layers of government and of course the media simply toe the line. Of course, it's not as simple as saying that there is one group and only one decision-making entity anywhere in the world. Of course, there are different forces and different cliques, cartels, you know, mafia crime families, if you like, that are holding sway at one time or another, and that they're certainly not always in agreement with each other. But I think it's, you know, probably appropriate to look at the way in which the world is run by comparing it to perhaps, you know, mafia crime families. And of course, you know, in times gone by, that was actually like a rival royal families. You know, there were so many conflicts in European history over, you know, one or another pretender to the throne, or one lineage battling with another lineage for control, and we saw that, you know, over hundreds of years. Of course, what we see now is a far more sophisticated, polished version of all that, with a layer of what appears to be rule of law and what appears to be mandates from the people to govern. And we see representatives that appear to be simply appointed by the will of the people. And I don't deny that process does occur and has some validity, and I actually do believe in it, and I wish it did work. But what I see going on in reality is something quite different. Now, I don't really have a lot to add in terms of the discussion over the leadership change in Australia, other than to say, again, you know, it doesn't really make much difference who's in charge. It won't change. And, you know, a few years ago, I actually had more hopes for the Labour Party. I was actually quite pleased when Labour won the 2007 election because we'd had such a horrendous time with John Howard, warmonger and basically, you know, lackey for the US empire and, you know, choir boy for the Iraq invasions, running the show for so long and establishing a pattern of outright deceit that really was really horrendous. And so, you know, when we had the change of leadership to Labour, I thought, well, maybe we'll actually see some real change. And we didn't. And, of course, these developments were mirrored in the US. You know, we saw Bush give way to Obama, and we saw just more of the same. But in case of Obama, I think it really has got worse. I really do see a deterioration with Obama as the president of the United States. You know, an increase in drone strikes, an increase in persecution of free speech, further, you know, further draconian legislations, and of course, revelations such as those brought forward by Edward Snowden, that he is defending, you know, defending the NSA PRISM program. So there's nothing much we can say about the pseudo democracy, the superficial layer of governance that we have, other than to say that it's all rather fake, all rather false, all rather disappointing. Now, I've got a few interviews lined up for today's show. I've got a little chat with Josh Jackson coming up in the second segment, and I've got another interview with Luke McKee, refugee and asylum seeker in various countries who burned his passport in the Australian embassy in Beijing. Anyway, interesting character, and I'll be chatting with him later on in the show today. Now, my top story of interest is still the Edward Snowden story, and I've got a couple of ABC and news interviews which I think highlight some of the extremes of the ABC. One is extremes in their I guess they're seesawing between whether they actually support Edward Snowden or whether they've actually joined the chorus of mainstream media around the world who is basically trying to demonize him. And the first clip I'm going to play you is actually from ABC television, and it's from ABC News Breakfast. And I just think it's interesting here to listen to the tone of voice of the interviewer, and you can really get a sense of a deliberate agenda, a deliberate editorial agenda here within the ABC to make Edward Snowden look like some sort of fugitive, and to really, really lay on the criticism of WikiLeaks. The interview is actually with a WikiLeaks spokesman, Kristen Frunson.
But I wonder why, given what Edward Snowden in full conscience decided to do and said that he felt he had a need to do in order to expose this surveillance, why not then stand and have the fight and stand up for what he did?
Well, this is something to ask for from a young man who has already sacrificed so much. We do not know what could be waiting for him in the United States. It could be even more serious charges than already are there. He's charged with espionage, and that is quite serious. And we only have to look at how Bradley Manning has been treated in the U.S. In his 3 years imprisonment before he got to trial, of which almost 1 year was in solitary confinement, under conditions that were deemed by an official of the United Nations as tantamount to torture. So this will give him a way to communicate with the public through the media. And as I believe he had already announced, to carefully pass on the information he already has in his hand and has not made public yet.
It occurs to me also a strange thing that WikiLeaks and people associated with WikiLeaks, Julian Assange in particular, the founder, and now Edward Snowden. Why does WikiLeaks favour Ecuador, given Ecuador's appalling state of press freedom? There's a 90-day ban on political reporting before an election there, 12 radio stations closed in the last year, 2 journalists murdered, 3 forced into exile, and a position on the Committee to Protect Journalists list of countries where press freedom is at risk. Why would fighters for press freedom end up in the arms of a regime like that?
Well, I think that your description of as you describe it, appalling press freedom in Ecuador is a bit of painting a little bit of too much of a bleak picture of the situation in the country.
Two journalists murdered, 3 forced into exile, and a 90-day ban on political reporting before an election doesn't cut it as appalling for you?
I don't have any information about anybody who is in prison as a journalist in Ecuador.
I do, and that's all from the Committee to Protect Journalists, and I believe them, and I'm sure you do too.
Well, the Committee to Protect Journalists might be wrong in some ways in their evaluation there.
Are you seriously questioning?
We do have problems within the journalistic community, and I'm a journalist myself. I've been one for 25 years, all over the world. We have all kinds of obstacles facing journalists in every country, even the Great Britain, who has had to deal with libel laws, which are so archaic that the journalists and media who are hit with such laws are not even able to talk about it publicly.
How many radio stations and television stations have been closed down in Great Britain in the last year?
Well, if you look at the details, I'm not going to start being a defender of the media policy in Ecuador. That is not my role. But if you look at the process...
It sounded like you were, so, okay, go on.
No, the only issue was that I have looked into the matter, and I don't see a total match between the strong words that you need and the reality. But of course, you can criticize media laws and the journalistic freedom in most countries in the world. There is not.
Okay, so the bottom line is that you have no problem with being the spokespeople, if you like, for press freedom and being associated with a regime like that.
Well,
I'll just leave it there. I'd just like to draw your attention to the incredibly belligerent tone there of the interviewer, and also the attempt to kind of shift the whole focus of the discussion onto some sort of hypocrisy on the part of WikiLeaks, because they're helping Mr. Snowden get to Ecuador, and Ecuador is not a poster child for press freedom. And, I mean, that's a deliberate tactic, isn't it? It's a very clear agenda to make all these people look bad, to kind of just manipulate your thinking in relation to this, to steer all of your thought away from the elephant in the room, which is what Mr. Snowden has actually revealed that's of incredible significance for the whole world. I'll be bringing you some more clips from ABC interviews later in the show. We're going to break. It is a great pleasure talking to you today. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check.
the groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. And it is a great pleasure to have your company today. And I do encourage you to check out our website at www.truthnews.com.au, where you can download our podcasts, which go back about 4 years now, actually closer to 5 years, in fact, with quite an amazing range of interviews with a whole lot of different people. And we cover issues as they arise. So it's an interesting kind of journey back in time to have a look at our archives. Now, I've got a clip here to play for you that I recorded earlier today with Josh Jackson. We had a little bit of trouble with the audio quality in it, so I do apologize for that. But Josh and I were just having a little chat about the Edward Snowden situation.
Josh Jackson, I'd like to get your take on the whole incredible story of Edward Snowden. But first of all, I'd just like to give you I'd just like to seed your mind with a few thoughts that I've had about it.
Yeah.
One being that this situation that's currently developed with Edward Snowden going from Hong Kong to Moscow has actually, in a way, it's really exacerbated the problems of the U.S. government, because it's heightened their kind of inability to do anything about the situation. It's heightened the sense that we have that America is kind of no longer in control of the situation, no longer really in control of world affairs in the way they used to be, because they cannot induce these two very significant countries to do anything that they want. And of course, at the same time as that, we see that the media in the US launching an incredible invective against Snowden, really just focusing on the man rather than the message. But at the same time as that, the rest of the world, apart from the sort of lapdog countries that always go along with the US, including Australia, of course, but the rest of the world really isn't taking them seriously. And the Chinese government hasn't taken them seriously. And you know what? Edward Snowden is not even on Interpol's arrest list. And I checked it myself. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, anyone's free to do it. Go to Interpol, look for who's wanted, and Edward Snowden is not wanted by Interpol. What's your take?
Well, the thing is that, the other states aren't really pining to Americans' pressure, but the thing here is I don't think it's that significant, because the information's already out, and the government of America has to step very closely because it's under attack from its own people as well about this. I mean, as much as influencechange.org or whatever it is, .gov site is where people put up petitions.
Oh, petitions, yes. Yeah, petitions. It's huge. It's well over 100,000 now.
It's
yeah.
well over 100,000. And so, it's... I think it's getting a lot of pressure from all around the place saying, hey, what the heck, A, are you spying on us? And every country's spying. And, Snowden then came out with the revelations about that the British are spying even more. And so it's really a whole quagmire. And I think countries are scrambling to look like the good guys. And saying, imagine if Snowden was Chinese or from Iran, he would have been given asylum by the USA and called, if he was, leaking secrets about Iranian spying, he would be called a hero and given refuge in the States. So really it's all hypocritical. It's all statist nonsense. The states around the world all trying, the countries around the world are all trying to look like the goodies, while not peeing off the states too much. But at the same time, I don't think the states has much say, like you said, at such a short notice. I think what they'll do is say, well, we had this free trade agreement that's going on the back burner now and all these sort of things. But to do these sort of things, but now that their economic situation isn't good enough for them to sort of have that leverage of saying, oh, you don't get America's big trade, because the fact is that everyone's in debt up to their eyeballs and can't really afford much these days.
Sure. But see, where I think it's interesting is that, you know, I like to sort of sit back and look at the media landscape. And as much as I hate watching mainstream media, I do it because I want to know what other people are seeing. I want to see the world the way the masses
layman.
Of sheeples see it. I want to see that perspective because it is still very influential. Mm. And what I'm seeing now is something unusual, because typically we see a very tightly integrated kind of propaganda machine that that makes it look to the average punter that you know, all's well in the world, that sensible people are in control, and that those who are on the fringes who come up against, you know, the wrong end of the law or the military are basically bad people who've done something wrong. And I guarantee you that's the way most people think. And they will tend to lean to the side of the government, lean to the side of the authorities in so many situations. But this situation now is becoming one where it's getting harder and harder for the propaganda machine of the Western Axis powers, you might call them, you know, the powers of globalist control that we see exercised through the US, the UK, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and a large part of Europe. It's getting harder for them to maintain the blanket control of their propaganda, where with an issue like Edward Snowden, in a sense, it's one man can change the world. I really believe that. I do believe that it's possible for one person to change the world. And I also, the flip side of that is that I think that if one person can change the world, imagine if we had 10. Imagine if we had 10 Edward Snowdens. Can you imagine?
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing would crumble. The whole edifice would crumble.
And I think that's an extraordinarily powerful statement that a lot of people, don't really understand, because... but they fear also, I mean, you know, I think what happens generally in crowd psychology is that you have, if you have 10 people, it's very hard to get 10. It's extraordinarily hard. It's extraordinarily hard to get one. And then 10.
Yes.
And then, but as you get more and more, it gets easier and easier. 20, 50, 60, all of a sudden more people come out, more, because you have this school of fish mentality, where if you're in a school of fish, then the shark's not going to get you. And so having this crowd of safety around you is a lot bigger. I mean, it's already easier for Edward Snowden than it was for Julian Assange, because Julian Assange has built a network, a safety net around him and international lawyers who have now stepped in to help Snowden. So as more and more people come out, I think... it'll become easier.
Yes, I think there's a really important point there about the connection there with WikiLeaks. I mean, that also has incredibly strengthened the effect of what Snowden has done, and again weakened the US, because obviously the US has been trying to get their hands on Assange as well, and they've failed. And so I think you're right. I think there could already be a snowball effect in progress, and we do need to see more. It's important that more people who have the ability to really shake things up step forwards. Josh, I know you're really busy. Just any quick thoughts? We've got about 30 seconds left.
No, I mean, I would just encourage people to donate if you have some bitcoins or something like that, or Litecoin, I think. To WikiLeaks, because I think they're under a lot of pressure at the moment to try and get the best people around these leakers. And
we're going to have to wind it up there. Sorry, Josh, we're at the end of the segment. Josh, we'll get you back on the show very soon, my friend. We're going
Thank
to break. We'll be right back.
man is so unjust. Children, yeah, don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy. Some will eat and drink.
Hi, welcome back to the show. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, for the next few minutes, I'm going to play you another interview that I recorded earlier today with Luke McKee, a man who's been on the show once before. He has a rather interesting story to tell about his persecution by the Australian government and his kind of travails in different countries after deliberately burning his passport in a kind of a protest at the Australian embassy in Beijing. But Luke ended up in Hong Kong at one point and was actually seeking asylum, a situation similar to that of Edward Snowden earlier last week. So I thought we'd just get a few words from Luke about some of his experiences. I hope you find it interesting. And I'm having problems with my audio quality today due to the fact that I was not in my usual studio with my high-quality microphones. So unfortunately, some of the audio is a little bit muffled or has some crackles in it, but a large part of it is actually quite okay, so I thought it was still worth providing that to you today. Luke McKee, welcome back to Truth News Radio. You've, of course, been on our show before, talking about some of your experiences with the Australian police and being a wanted man overseas. And I thought it was some interesting parallels there between the story of Edward Snowden. You've actually been in Hong Kong. You've had some dealings with the authorities there. You've been a refugee. And I thought it'd be very interesting to hear your take on what it's actually like being in Hong Kong seeking asylum. You, of course, rejected your Australian citizenship very publicly. But maybe just give us a recap on your experiences there in Hong Kong and China.
Well, first of all, as you know, the matter started in 2007 in Australia. An illegal immigrant needed a visa, and the only way an illegal immigrant can stay is to get a court appearance notice from the police, which immigration, they can be cashed into immigration for a criminal justice bridging visa. And of course, an innocent person has to be accused of a crime to facilitate an illegal immigrant staying in the country. And I, in my frame-up, I won the judicial proceedings and I made a complaint against police, and I was accused of the crime of knowing information I shouldn't about a police officer when making the complaint, the crime of knowing you have been discriminated against, because it is a crime in New South Wales, Australia, to know the sexual preference of a police officer or anything else that would be classified as personal information. That law doesn't apply to the police minister who took my complaint against a gay and lesbian liaison officer, one David Campbell, who was filmed leaving a gay sex club by Channel 7 News. And the government, the federal government, the ACMA, ruled that he could be blackmailed by those who knew his closet homosexual status to do their bidding. And that's why Channel 7 was justified in their news report. So, I was in the year 2010, I was in China on a lawful visa, working there.
Right.
And I got an email, which I had been very dormant, minding my own business, and I got an email from the now disgraced Parliamentary Secretary for Police, Angela D'Amore, who lost her appeal against the Independent Commission Against Corruption for thwarting parliamentary expenses for the second time 5 days ago. She sent me an email using the address policy@bigpond.net.au. Big Pond is just a generic ISP like AT&T in America, or Time Warner or something like that. And this, according to the Hansard, which is like CNET in America, where they, C-SPAN in America, said that this email address is not used by the police. The police minister said that in 2009. Anyway, I get this strange email from saying that my matter has been covered up and you you have any more complaints, go call Crime Stoppers to complain about police, which is not where you go. And, you know, just them agitating me, saying that my original complaint has been covered and we're not doing anything, annoyed me to the point that I wanted to renounce Australian citizenship and just with the whole mess. So I took a Canadian friend of mine, Stephen, to the embassy, submitted my form 182 to renounce my citizenship. By this stage, I was travelling on New Zealand passport. And the video is online. If any of your listeners type burnpassport.mp4 to YouTube, you'll see the video. And in the video, I only named one person, the police's private general counsel, Michael Antrim, who was going around issuing threats to any website I published my story on. Now, in Australia, the police have no legal authority to censor websites. So in 2002, they tried to get the Internet Censorship Bill in 2001, which failed. And a man who is the top lawyer for the police, who's now the magistrate for Wagga Wagga, who's been promoted, should be better. That's why I only named him. After what happened, making that video with all of ASIO's cameras looking down at me in this Chinese compound, made my peaceful protest.
This in Beijing, Luke? Did you do this in Beijing?
At the embassy in Beijing. Anyone can see the video of what I said? It was a peaceful protest. There was no incident. After making the video, I was very, very gently escorted out. There was no... And it was on Australian soil, the protest in China, technically. But that didn't stop the Australian government. I later found out that my former employer had a walk-in. Two former employers had a walk-in by the Tianjin police. And this made me get very concerned. And I had the heads up that, you know, people were hunting me down and trying to be meeting with them when they shouldn't be. I got to the bottom of it. I had found out the Australian government had made false representations to the Chinese government that I was a terrorist bomber. And I'm surprised this never made the mainstream media. Because if you're going to accuse someone of being a terrorist, you should at least, you know, the government should have weighed in on and said why Luke McKee is a terrorist.
Seems like accusing someone of being a terrorist is a very convenient ruse these days for getting the governments of any country to do your bidding. If you want someone arrested, you just use that terminology, and it generally happens, doesn't it? So what actually happened to you? So you're in Beijing. You've earned your Australian passport.
After doing that stunt in Beijing, I decided to go somewhere nice and quiet in China, and I was working in Zicheng, where the rockets take off, in Sichuan province, and the local police were dispatched to pick me up on order from the Tianjin police. Now, I'm then thrown onto a train with two police handlers and taken to Chengdu for a meeting, with no notice whatsoever, without being able to pack my bags and my effects to actually know. After that 15-minute meeting, I was driven to the airport, and there was no... by duress, I was thrown onto a plane without my possessions by a Tianjin police officer. I did manage to have a Chinese friend accompany me on the train trip. And later, I confirmed that the guy wasn't from around there. He had travelled from the Tianjin police agency. My Dragonair plane ticket was paid for in cash. Now, if someone's going to be deported from China, you'd normally expect them to be jailed in a legal process and what have you. This is basically an extraordinary rendition. Now, what saved me is there's no direct flights from Chengdu to New Zealand or Australia. Now, if I was to go to New Zealand with my situation, being wanted for a crime that doesn't exist in New Zealand, because New Zealand, you can tell, isn't really a country in its own right anymore, has no sovereignty, because if a foreign government make its laws, and exercise those laws on New Zealand citizens. And the New Zealand government has given a blank check to the Australian government to arrest its citizens for any crime under the backing of warrant scheme. Now, the backing of warrant scheme is just like the European arrest warrant scheme in the EU. So we have Australian people like Fred Tobin being arrested in England for the crime of Holocaust denial that doesn't exist in England. And
Luke, we're just going to break. Yeah. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay with us, talking to Luke McKee about his experiences in China.
Hi, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, which beams out on the Logos Radio Network across Austin, Texas, Oklahoma City, and a number of other cities across the US, and of course is available streaming through the Logos Radio Network radio stream globally, and also available by podcast using iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Now, just returning you to the interview I recorded earlier today with Luke McKee. And again, apologies for the poor audio. I did have to terminate the interview due to some problems, but here it is, a few more minutes of the interview with Luke McKee. Now, Luke, after your public renunciation of your Australian citizenship, you travelled to Hong Kong, and I actually have online a document which says you were seeking asylum in Hong Kong, and there's no actual date on this document, but I presume it was a couple of years ago. Oh, here it is, 30th of April 2010, and it says, it's got your photograph here, and it says that you're an asylum seeker whose case is under consideration by the United Nations High Commissioner for refugees. So how did you end up in Hong Kong, and what happened?
Well, I ended up in duress. I managed to get off the plane in Hong Kong at the transit stop, and sneak through customs. And then the very next day, I found where the UN HCR was, but I actually bumped into another refugee, believe it or not, and I went to their refugee processing office, which is on top of a car park, government car park in Kowloon. Now, I only stayed in Hong Kong for 3 months to the day, because if I stayed over, I would become an illegal immigrant with no rights. The most interesting thing about Hong Kong, and why you're talking to me today, is it's the only place where the UNHCR has full autonomy over refugee case management. Hong Kong hasn't signed the Convention 59 or 61 regarding the status of refugees, only recognising that torture is wrong in that country. So basically, it's a legal grey area. There is no... The UN itself, without any government oversight, has the fate of every refugee that goes to Hong Kong in their hands. If you walk into this office, the office where the refugees go, you, as a refugee, you are not given any documentation to say that you are a refugee, so you can be picked up by the Hong Kong authorities at any time. Most refugees end up going in periodic nighttime detention, but other refugees that are classed as a security risk, like myself, from their respective government, can get up to 20 years. There has been cases of people being in general population for 20 years without trial. This is
incredible.
This is
incredible.
The people to research who know most about this is Christian Action in Hong Kong, who is a charity group who look after most of the refugees. They'll be familiar with those cases in you should contact them for a follow-up interview if you can.
Sure.
Now, for me to prove I was a refugee, I had to be struck down by misfortune. I had an abscess, and I had to go into hospital to save my life. And when I was post-op, I managed to get that document from the nurse. But normally, anyone who's a refugee in Hong Kong has nothing to prove that they are a refugee. And I've heard stories from female refugees saying that they were solicited for sex by UN officials. Men have been told if they pay enough money, they can get an humanitarian visa. And real refugees can get jailed without trial almost. So this is the UN. This is where the UN has full control of everything, and this is what happens. It's a mess. Nobody, even a Palestinian guy who spends all this time trying to tell other Palestinians, whatever you do, don't go to Hong Kong.
And that's where we'll have to leave that interview. Some interesting points there, and certainly changes the perspective that you might have on Hong Kong from what you might have heard in the media during the Snowden affair. Now, still on the Edward Snowden theme, I'd like to play you another clip from the ABC, and this one is actually quite a different tenor to the one I was playing earlier for you. This is an interview with another whistleblower, a man by the name of Thomas Drake, who was actually charged with felony offences, which were later dropped in relation to information that he disclosed. And kudos to the ABC, because this is actually a much better interview and really does get to the heart of the issue. You know, I'm not basically just wanting to sing the praises of Edward Snowden here. I'm actually really wanting to look at the substantive matters that he has raised, and look at what he's done. Look at the message rather than the person. And of course, yes, he has. He's betrayed some covenants that he entered into. He has probably broken the law as it stands. But on the other hand, he's performed this incredible public service. And here's some thoughts from Thomas Drake on all of that.
Mr. Drake, if Mr. Snowden arrives in a country like Ecuador that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the United States, does that mean that he's entirely safe from being returned to the U.S.?
I think it makes it much more difficult for the U.S. to seek his return, given there is no formal extradition treaty per se. And, Ecuador is, under the ALBA agreements, they pride themselves on taking a stance against, kind of the imperial tendencies of their large northern neighbor.
In a nutshell, explain for my audience what you were charged with and what the outcome was.
I blew the whistle on massive fraud, waste, and abuse in the multi-billions of dollars. I also blew the whistle with two 9/11 congressional investigations with respect to the secret surveillance program, which is really the set of foundation programs that Snowden disclosed in terms of actual documents that we now see revealed. I was charged in a 10-felony count indictment, facing 35 years in prison, 5 under the Espionage Act, 1 for obstruction of justice, and 4 for making false statements.
And what happened with those charges?
Their case ultimately collapsed under the weight of truth, also in the court of public opinion, and I ultimately prevailed and was able to keep my freedom.
Well, not everybody thinks Edward Snowden did the right thing. I presume you do?
I consider Edward Snowden a whistleblower. I know some have called him a hero, some have called him a traitor. I focus on what he disclosed. I don't focus on him as a person. He did have a belief that what he was exposed to, U.S. actions in secret or violating privacy and human rights on a very, very large scale, far beyond anything that had been admitted to date by the government. And so in the public interest, he made that available.
What do you say to the argument advanced by those with the opposite viewpoint to you, especially in the US Congress and in the White House, that Edward Snowden is a traitor who made a narcissistic decision that he personally had a right to decide what classified information should be in the public domain?
That's a government meme, it's a government cover, it's a government story. The government is desperate to not deal with the actual disclosures, the content of those disclosures, because they do reveal a vast, systemic, institutionalized, industrial-scale Leviathan surveillance system that has clearly gone far beyond the original mandate to deal with terrorism, far beyond.
Is it fair to say, though, that governments and their militaries and their intelligence services and their diplomatic arms require a degree of secrecy if they're to be effective?
Yes, I was in the system for many, many years. I'm the first to tell you, as Daniel Ellsberg himself has said more recently, there are secrets, very, very few, but there are secrets worth keeping. Troop movements, you know, nuclear secrets, things of that nature. What we're seeing here, though, is secret law, secret rules, secret programs that have been removed from any form of public debate.
Somebody who works for a security agency and leaks classified information would be well aware that that is a serious crime that attracts a serious penalty, regardless of whether history judges that that leak was in the public interest. Therefore, does Edward Snowden have any right to plead for leniency?
Well, you know, we'll see how things develop when they plead for leniency. He's outside the U.S., and, you know, that does give him some advantages in terms of the long arm of, quote-unquote, U.S. justice. I believe he committed a magnificent act of civil disobedience. He knew full well what risk he was taking, and he knew that he was potentially sacrificing his own safety, his own well-being, and ultimately even putting his entire personal freedom at risk in disclosing top secret information regarding surveillance programs conducted by the United States government.
And I think that that statement there really gets to the heart of it. You know, the fact that this guy made an incredible sacrifice, the fact that this guy took incredible risks, and that is the essence of it. And it's great to actually see that on mainstream media of any kind, because for the most part, we're just getting either a very, very kind of distanced, kind of uninsightful way of covering Edward Snowden, talking about his movements, talking about how he's on the run, talking about him as if he's some kind of fugitive. And I'd like to just close with a couple of statements here from Glenn Greenwald, who broke the story. When asked about his thoughts on how the media has greeted his work, Greenwald recently said the following, and this is from an article in the Washington Post. They are far more servants to political power than adversarial watchdogs over it. And what provokes their rage most is not corruption on the part of those in power, they don't care about that, but rather those that expose that corruption. They're just courtiers doing what courtiers have always done, defending the royal court and attacking anyone who challenges or dissents from it. Well, that's the end of Hour 1, folks. In Hour 2, we're bringing you a replay of the Brian Monk interview from a couple of weeks ago. It's excellent. Please stay tuned.